You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.
Look, is it going to win an Emmy? No. But does every show need to win an Emmy? No. And you learn more by getting uncomfortable.
Welcome into another episode of Baseball America's From Phenom to the Farm. I'm your host, Kyle Bandujo. On today's episode, the first of 2024, we are talking to broadcaster Dominique Catronio. Dominique handles stats and research for the Brewers booth and hosts the radio postgame show, but in his short career, he's really been a renaissance man. He's called baseball at multiple professional and amateur levels, and during his time at Arizona State, he's called numerous Sun Devil sports, baseball, hockey, water polo, he's even called pickleball. Is the son of longtime A's play-by-play man Vince Catronio. Broadcasting isn't his bloodlines, but as we'll discuss, he's really working to forge his own path in sports while constantly working to sharpen his craft with advice from his dad and many other broadcasters. We talk about his run at multiple levels of baseball, what makes those levels different in terms of calling the game, how calling things like pickleball can help him with baseball. We'll also talk about his passion for the sport of golf. He's a caddy at Erin Hills. Golf is a big thing for me, so we do a little golf minute and what he thinks needs to change in the world of calling golf. I think we could easily see him calling golf one day, calling a major championship as we could calling big league baseball. It's a really interesting rise in a very short career thus far. He's got a long road ahead of him. Was really excited to have Dominique on the show and talk out his run in baseball. Episodes of From Phenom to the Farm drop every other Tuesday. If you enjoy this one, subscribe wherever you get your podcast, and go check out past interviews. And if you haven't yet, leave a 5-star rating and a review on Apple Podcast. I appreciate people bearing with us on this first episode of 2024. Took a little bit of a hiatus for some paternity leave, but I am back to every other Tuesday, so you can count on those episodes coming. Also, make sure to subscribe to BaseballAmerica.com and the BA Podcast feed for all amateur baseball and prospect news. The International Top 50 was just released. Prospect Handbook is available. And we got spring training coming up. It is always a good time to subscribe to Baseball America. And with that, let's talk to Dominique Catronio. All right, joining in on today's episode from Phenom to the Farm, he's the host of Brewers Extra Innings, and he is also a caddy at one of the best golf courses in America, Dom Catronio. Dom, thank you so much for joining the show.
Yeah, appreciate it. Happy winter, happy offseason. Shout out to Shohei Ohtani.
Shout out Shohei Ohtani. Happy offseason, but in your line of work, is there really an offseason?
There's a less busy season. Let's put it like that. Right now I'm in less busy season, with the holidays right around the corner, but I'm already looking at, I think I'm going to book my flights for spring training by the end of the week. So it's really, it doesn't really end.
I figured, and we'll get into that because you're not just, you haven't just solely called baseball. You haven't just solely done play-by-play work, so you've got a looking at your resume on your website, I didn't even know where to start. So I want to start at the beginning. You grew up, you've got baseball in your blood, play-by-play in your blood. When did you decide that you wanted to make broadcasting a career?
It was probably sophomore, junior year of high school. For a long time, I wanted to be a teacher, and I wanted to be, a coach. I wanted to be a leader of some kind, somebody that teaches and leadership qualities, that sort of thing. prior to that, though, I wanted to be an astronaut. Then I realized you needed like 20 years of naval pilot experience, 20/20 vision. I have giant glasses on, so that wasn't going to happen. And I also wasn't talented enough to play baseball for 20 years. So I was once I finished playing my JV year, and I use that term loosely. I just kind of started thinking like, man, how do I stay involved with baseball? What do I want to do? And obviously you mentioned my dad, Vince, now just finished his 31st season in the show. God bless. Incredible, incredible career. But he never said you should do this ever, honestly. And I appreciate that because he was always very real with me about it. Like, hey, this is a hard business. This is subjective. This is, you're going to subject yourself to a lot of stuff that you maybe don't want to hear, obviously with the current climate around Nepo babies and things like that. But still, my junior year of high school, I was just sitting behind the batting cage one day, and like one of my teammates was saying, like, do play by play like your dad. Like I want to hear what it sounds like. And I just did it naturally. I'm like, maybe I can do this. And I started doing it in high school, just totally on my own, saved up for a laptop. And I was working at a local golf course at the time and saved up for a laptop, used the hotspot from my cell phone. And this was like the very early days of hotspots. It was like very shaky. We found the Booster Club, paid for my like subscription service to stream the games live on this website. And I would do all the road games for grandparents and family to listen to back in Gilbert, Arizona. So it was my indoctrination of like, okay, we want to do this. And then I went to Arizona State and the rest is history.
Well, with that, I pulled, doing some of the research, there was a profile written on you when you were calling for Down East in the, you're going to need to pronounce it, noisy, like Sheldon News.
So it's the Noose News. Yeah, I know. Noose, it's N-E-U-S-E. It's the Noose River, which rolls through Kinston, very famous river that rolls through Eastern North Carolina. But yes, that's through a friend of mine, Brian Hanks, who was our PA announcer down there in Kinston. And he was very, very kind to me during my 2 years in Kinston.
Well, they wrote a very nice profile on you that made my job a little bit easier prepping for this. But it said you started a student stream broadcast. When you're talking about calling these games, like what was the pitch? And like, how did you go from calling BP and saying, hey, I might want to do this, to coming up with the idea of, hey, I should call these games? Because like, I live in Texas, you lived in Texas. A lot of those broadcasts are taken care of. We have our, you know, there's home, there's a way, it's a big deal. How did you say, you know, I guess you saw a supply issue and filled a demand here?
It was in Arizona. It's, you know, high school sports aren't anything like what it is in Texas. Now, that's not discrediting Arizona high school sports. Like, Arizona football has been on the up and up lately, but obviously Arizona baseball has always been a hot spot. Arizona basketball has been popping off as of late. Guys like Marcus Howard, Andrews Pete is going to be in the next generation, guys like that. But when I think of baseball, and it was truly, how far can I take this? It was never, this is for a class, or I'm doing this because my dad wants me to do it, or because somebody was already doing it before. It was truly like, okay, maybe we can do this. And it was just solving problems. And that's kind of one of my mottos that have been instilled in me through my dad, and actually through my first grade teacher who inspired the whole teacher thing. Her motto was just always solve the problem. And I've just kind of taken that as, okay, let's one step at a time. Let's solve this. Let's figure this out, because might as well figure out if I want to do this now before I figure out what my major is going to be in college. And if, like, do I really want to go into the sports media world and go to, because at this point I was a better golfer than I was a baseball player. And I was looking at playing collegiate golf, trying to, all right, do I want to go to a small school, maybe lesser academics, but get to play college golf? Or do I bail on college golf, go to a big school like Arizona State, which I ultimately chose to do, and focus on this as my career? And it was just always started as, yeah, why not? You know, let's just see what happens. And the worst they can say is no. And the Booster Club is really who I have to thank. Mr. Dave Doan, shout out to you, Mr. Doan, who really was the first person to AKA sponsor me, if you will, to say like, yeah, well, the Booster Club will put up the $50 a month for this streaming service for you to call our games.
So you're the second broadcaster we've had on the show. The first was a mutual friend of ours, Trey Wilson. And you guys had different experiences in terms of Trey went to a very small school, and that was a big part of his story at its small school athletics. It is all hands on deck. And for Trey, that fortunately gave him the ability to, he got on a call very early in his college run, was able to call a lot of different things, and even parlay that into some in-college minor league baseball. You go to one of the biggest schools in the country, huge broadcast, huge journalism program. What are the barriers to actually getting to hone your craft in real time when you go to a big school like that and a big program?
Luckily, at Arizona State, you know, the Cronkite School, sports was still kind of in its infancy when I was a student as far as how they approached covering sports at the school. And I tell this to any prospective student that's considering, like, you know, the traditional journalism powers, the Mizzou's, the Syracuse's, the Arizona State's, the USC's. I was on the air 7 a.m. day one of classes. Like, I was on the very first shift on the air. So I was always taught through my dad and through people in the industry, get reps, do it, get better. You only get better by being on the microphone and self-analyzing. So I was already calling ASU baseball games as a freshman. And I take subtle digs at Syracuse. Look, Syracuse does an amazing job. Their reputation precedes them. Who they have produced speaks for itself. Syracuse doesn't have baseball. Syracuse, you don't get to call play-by-play of, you know, a revenue-generating sport, a football or a basketball, until you're at least a junior. Even then, you maybe only get one chance. So I tell kids all the time, if you want to be on the air, go to Arizona State. If you want to be on the air, you can go to a smaller school, too, and just get on the air. Now, you're going to be trained very well at a place like Syracuse or a place like Mizzou or a place like Northwestern. You're going to be trained well. And ASU has caught up in that regard as far as, oh, we're going to offer play-by-play courses now. Gary Thorne taught the first play-by-play course at Arizona State right after I had left, of course. So I look at that experience as the reason why I chose ASU ultimately, not play college golf, because it came down to two schools, Arizona State and, ironically, a school called Dominican University in San Rafael, California. And Division II school, nothing crazy, but they had an independent league team, the San Rafael Pacifics, that they had internships and things that you could eventually fold into some play-by-play. So that would have been the plan there, but the plan was getting on the air. So that's what I tell anybody. The reason why I went to ASU is because there was a pitch to be on the air as quickly as possible and get better as quickly as possible.
So I want to touch on that, the getting better and the self-evaluation part. I want to go through that a couple times as we talk. But when you're in college and you're just starting out, you're first starting to do this, I would assume the self-evaluation part is a little bit different than, say, if you call a game now with, you know, over half a decade in the business. So what did that entail when you first started out? Because that, like, it's completely different, but I know getting behind a mic podcasting, I'm a lot better now than I was 5 years ago in just terms of comfort and just in terms of being able to riff. What were the things, like your early years at Arizona State, where you consciously, you'd finish a broadcast and think, I've got to get better at this. I've got to improve. It's like improving a golf game. I got to work with my wedges. I got to putt better, things like that. Like, what were the baby steps, I guess, of upping your game before you got out of college?
It's the cliche of, like, big fish, small pond, and then you become a small fish in a big pond kind of thing. So I was a big fish, if you will. Forgive the expression. It sounds so pretentious to say it like that. But, like, I was a big fish at Arizona State because there weren't many other kids doing sports like I was doing. Then my first year, I was very lucky to be a broadcaster on the Cape Cod Baseball League. And it was a wild setup because freshmen don't generally get those jobs. And I was set to be an intern in Hyannis, not necessarily be on the air, be like a game day intern helping out, maybe do score sheets and the scout sheets and rosters, things like that. Then all of a sudden, an opening became available in Chatham, which was like the dream spot. And my first few games in Chatham, I realized, like, I say the expression all the time, and you ain't bleep, you know, like, you ain't crap. Like, so being around all these talented Syracuse kids and talented, you know, other people, shoot, just from that summer, that first summer, 2014. So myself was in that summer. Mike Monaco was in that summer with the Wareham Gateman. He's now a fill-in voice on the Red Sox and the White Sox, and he does ESPN, and he does a lot of incredible work. Brendan Glasheen, he does some Maine Celtics stuff, G League for them. Greg Meraz did some professional play-by-play.
I know Greg.
Yes, Greg's a great friend, Pac-12 guy as well. And there's just so many names that are just flooding to my head right now that were also doing great stuff. And I'm the freshman, and I just sit here, I'm like, I need to get better. Like, I am just not even close to it. And these guys are juniors and seniors, which to be expected, but it just really ignited that, okay, this is what I can become faster than these guys became it. So it was truly a you ain't bleep moment. Myself and Johnny Wincott was my partner. Johnny's still a great friend to this day, and he's still a really good broadcaster doing a lot of stuff in the New York area, New Jersey area, like Stony Brook Athletics and other things like that. So I that's the self-evaluation. The tip that actually tip came from Joe Davis right when he was starting his ESPN Fox crossover doing college football. He got a lot of the Pac-12 slate when I was a student, so I got to connect with Joe a little bit when I was still at Arizona State, and he's still been a great influence for me even years later.
What is that community like? I know in reading stuff about you and talking to other broadcasters, is like, oh, this person inspires me, or is a great, you know, someone I kind of want to be like. What is the community in terms of like, best practices and tip sharing? Like if you're in a baseball bullpen, you know, this guy might have a slider grip you want to try, or something like that. Just trying to make the connection there. What are there? Best practices shared among colleagues or tips or things like that? Or is it something you really have to take and just figure out your own way?
It's a mix of both, but like our version, the broadcaster version of working on your slider grip is sending your tape to somebody more established or somebody a little higher up. So I sent tapes to everybody when I was growing up, because this is partial advice from my dad, but also my own realization of my only coach can't be my dad. And it needs to be, and every broadcaster in America has done this. They send a tape to somebody, and you send it to somebody you admire, somebody you want to hear from, and you get it just absolutely roasted to pieces and shredded to pieces. That's the point. That's how you get better, right? We don't have Rap Soto telling us, okay, our spin efficiency was 85% on that. We need to get that up to 90. Or we don't have quantitative data to say this is how you get better. It's all qualitative, listening to as many opinions as you can. I remember I had this great tape. I thought I was dialed after the Cape Cod season. I got better. I was feeling really good. And I had sent that tape to Jason Benetti. And I had met Benetti through spring training and everything. So, hey, Jason, I know you've met my dad before, but I just wanted to introduce myself. This is my tape. Please feel free to say whatever you want. And any sort of advice is welcome. And he shredded it to bits. And I thank him every day for that. Like it was exactly what I needed and exactly how you continue to get better and better and better. He's been a great help. Brian Anderson's an obvious pick as a great help. Ken Korak has been incredible. My dad's partner with Oakland, and Brian is who I work with now here in Milwaukee. So there are countless others that have helped me along the way. And this community is all based on the fact of maybe the previous generation didn't quite help out this generation of stalwarts that we see now. So the guys that are in the position now are making sure to help the next generation, unlike maybe previous ones have done so. So it's been really fun to see it kind of grow, and people you know and people you've connected with over the years continuing to help down the road for the next generation.
How much are you and your dad able to talk shop as not coworkers, but like people in the same field? Because it's funny, we're doing this after I've done the last four episodes, a series on sports parenting. And one of the truths, and something that we've talked about with those guests, and I've learned with myself as a Little League coach, it's just a lot tougher to coach your own child than it is other people's children. Is that something, do you guys talk shop like in that way? Or is it more of just, he is an encouraging presence?
It's we definitely talk shop. I mean, he was the first guy to, you know, to shred it to bits, as I said. I mean, I remember I was doing my very first game ever, high school junior, and I'm literally sitting on the first baseline because that was this particular park. There was no space directly behind home. And when I was doing it in high school, I'm literally bringing a table, setting it up right behind home, calling it from ground level and doing the best I can. Here I am calling my first game ever on top of the first base dugout. My dad's sending me texts like, you need to say this. You haven't said the score. What direction's the ball hit? I'm like, my head's spinning right now, Dad. I need you to slow down. So
he's the dad in the bleachers and you're in the dugout and he's telling you to stay back. And
thank God he was not
swing
that
at the
dad.
High pitch.
Yeah, thank God he was not that dad when I actually played baseball. He was him and my mom were the most low key, probably because they knew I wasn't going to be a big leaguer. And second, that there were other parents like that on teams that I grew up with. So I'm very glad that that. But this is, you know, a field that my dad actually has expertise in. Right. Like my middle sister, she went into meat science and meat judging when she was in college. My dad's got no expertise in that. My youngest sister was an animator and an artist and has been really talented in the artsy side of things. My dad's not no experience in that. So he's able to connect with me on that. When we talk shop as much as we can during the season, and it's great because I'm Central Time Zone. He's West Coast. I can be leaving my post-game show, turn on the game, and I can catch maybe the last four innings of his game. So in this year with a lot more TV time for him, I got to watch a lot more games. I got to listen to plenty as well. And then, of course, we got to do a series head-to-head this year. The A's came to Milwaukee. It was the first time ever we both have worked a regular season game together. Now, obviously him with the A's and me with the Brewers, but the way it works in Milwaukee is that the visiting radio booth is actually next door to the home TV booth. And we were literally separated by a wall. Like, so my dad sat on the right seat of that visiting radio booth. And I was in the left seat of that home TV booth. So the only thing separated was a wall. And they had a great shot of two of us working side by side in a regular season game. So those are the moments where it all gets worth it. We've called spring training games together too for the A's, and those days have passed, but those are really, really fun every year to get to do with my dad.
So in this, again, in this profile and the new snooze that I pulled, it says that and this was in 2017. So this is kind of fresh out of college. So by then it says you've broadcast baseball, hockey, football, basketball, softball, volleyball, pickleball, tennis, and water polo.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I know, like, general sports fans, like, I know baseball, I know football well enough. You're diving into some literally waters, you know, talking mm-hmm. water polo and things like that. What is, I just want you to walk me through that. Hey, Dom, you got to call the water polo game. How familiar were you with water polo beforehand? What does that prep look like versus the prep for an Arizona State baseball game?
It's basically get the names right, first and foremost, pronunciations, head coaches, assistant coaches, everyone that's going to be around the pool. And then familiarize yourself with the penalties, with the rules, you know, foul calls, things like that. And then luckily for all those streams, like for tennis and water polo in particular, those were college streams. So we generally had either a scratch join us on the show, so somebody on the team that can offer insight, or like an alum that's around the program still that wanted to help out and do some things. So, and you just lean on your color because we can see the pictures. I don't need to describe it like it's on radio, and get excited, call it as you see it, and lean on your color. And is it going to win an Emmy? No, but does every show need to win an Emmy? No. And you learn more by getting uncomfortable. You learn by trying to see what works, see what doesn't work. Caught a lot of high school women's basketball when I was a student, and like trying out catchphrases, trying out terrible things, and realize what works and doesn't work. And you only get better with experience. You can't just, you know, sit there and watch a game and shoot. I still sitting with my stats headset on like I do nowadays during the game. I'm calling the game in my head, just taking mental reps, or I'm watching an NBA game and I'm calling the game in my head of like what I would say here, you know, Antetokounmpo in the left block. And like, if I'm practicing for a radio call, if I'm practicing for a TV call, and it that experience being in other sports obviously helps the baseball, because there's so much action in those other sports that when the action finally happens in baseball, you're ready for it. So everything feeds into something to help yourself out when it comes to baseball, when it comes to basketball, football, whatever you may be calling, everything's connected.
So catchphrases, on the first time I was introduced to who you are is in the No Laying Up Travel series Strapped. There's a little bit of a conversation about catchphrases in your episode. There's a bigger one when Benetti comes on, shout out Bang Lang. when you're trying out catchphrases, is that something you're in the shop, you're cooking, you're trying to come up with something, or like you're going to call water polo or pickleball or something like that, and you're like, I got to figure out something to say when there's an impactful moment, or does it have to be all off the cuff?
Most of it was off the cuff, honestly, when I was workshopping. And now today I have nothing. The only thing I have today is a tagline, like to sign off the broadcast when I'm done. It's my motto. It's keep on swinging, which is what you're referring to from that episode of Strapped. And for people who don't know, it's No Laying Up, which is a golf media company. They have a very popular golf podcast. They also do some golf adjacent stuff on their YouTube page. And I was in one of their things called Strapped, which they dropped two of their members, Neil and Big Randy, to insert city here, have a budget, so on and so forth. You can explore at your own leisure. But they
interview the best travel series in the game. Would recommend it to everyone, even if you're not a golf fan.
It's really funny, and they're great personalities, and it's really, really fun. But yeah, that's Keep On Swinging came when I was in college. It was inspired actually by a classmate of mine when we were calling junior league hockey, maybe the worst junior league to ever exist, because this was AHL, the Arizona Redhawks. They played out of an Arizona ice, like a polar ice in the West Valley in Peoria. And they were losing games continually, 16-0, 15-1. Like it was the worst hockey I've ever watched. And we would do a post-game show. And one kid would always say, keep your stick on the ice. I'm like, oh, that's pretty good. I like that. And then my profile as a baseball player was gritty, don't strike out, put the ball in play, keep on swinging, you know, try hard, if you will, you know, hustle always. So keep on swinging felt very natural. And it also kind of comes partially inspired by Dory from Finding Nemo, keep on swimming. So keep on swinging is the only thing I really keep as far as catchphrases go. And my dad doesn't have a catchphrase. BA doesn't have a catchphrase. Obviously, Bob Uecker has get up, get out of here, gone. But Lane and Jeff and Josh don't really have one with our radio crew here. It's a lot more common than you think to not have one, because it's got to be good if it's going to stick around.
It's funny. I was going to ask you about what are the misconceptions about your job, and this just seems like a good time for it, because that is something that I think every baseball, you know, John Miller and Matt Vasgersian and things, everyone, you got to have a catchphrase. What are other misconceptions, like things people ask you about your job or things people think you do that are just off the reservation?
When it comes to play-by-play, and this works perfectly because now I'm a statistician with the play-by-play, still wanting to do more play-by-play. But I think people assume for some reason that the guy in the play-by-play chair, guy or gal in play-by-play chair, isn't doing any prep, that they aren't doing their own research, and that me as a statistician is handing everything they say. That is the furthest thing from the case. I'm there for support. I can bring my own ideas, but it's so that, you know, BA can hit Brian Anderson, can hit the cough button, turn to me and say, can you look up this, that, and the other? And then I write it on a note card and hand it to him to influence what he's supposed to say. He doesn't have to say, Dom Catronio tells me that. No, that's not the point. The point is he's able to weave something. He wasn't able to look it up quickly enough. He wanted to use me to look it up. And I think that's an example of us working together, nor should he say my name every time. And another misconception I think we always have is that the play-by-play guy is calling the shots. Like, they're cutting to whatever. That's the director, the producer, the replays, all that. Like, we're not in the booth. We're not hitting the buttons for the replays or for when the referee is coming on camera. Like, that's not us. There's other people who are in charge of that traffic in the truck. So I've never understood when people are complaining to national broadcasters, why'd you show this? You didn't show the right angle on this replay. What do you go? We don't do that. Like, we react to what's on the screen just like you. We get a heads up in our ear of like what's coming, but no, we have no control over what's that. And maybe the reason why you don't see a certain angle that you're asking for is because we don't have it. Like, that camera was assigned to following the runner on third, so normally you would expect that angle from across from first or whatever. There's always a reason for you not to see something. If we have it, you're gonna see it, is generally the motive in television.
So you graduate college, graduate from Arizona State, you've called
I'll
all
pause
these
you there. I did not graduate. I correct everybody about this. Everyone assumes it. I did not graduate from Arizona State. I do not recommend the path that I chose.
So you declare for the draft early then?
Pretty much, exactly. I left as a junior.
So what, I mean, if it's worth unpacking, what, you know, what went into that and how did you end up in Orem? How did you end up in minor league baseball?
So I think for one, I wasn't a great student and I regret that tremendously, but at the same time, everything happens for a reason. And it was nothing dire or anything like that, but I was always the kid that valued real world experience over taking a gen ed class. And that was like, hey, you're paying for college, you should be there. I'm like, yeah, you know what, you're right. So what ended up happening was I was applying for jobs in 2016, still as a student, not expecting to get anything. And then Orem popped up, and Orem was available because the year prior they had a very insensitive promotion that led to their broadcaster quitting in the middle of the year, and they had a vacancy and it was still vacant. And I said, screw it, I'll take the job, and just didn't go back to school after that, because that job led to another job, which led to another job, and it just never went back. And at that time, now it's a lot better, but at that time, hey, can I take my classes online to finish this up? They were like, no, you got to be in person for this. I'm like, oh, okay. Obviously, the world has changed since 2016 as far as the culture and the thought to online classes. But everything happens for a reason. I've promised my mom I'm going to get it done one day. And trust me, I'm still paying those student loans that obviously I didn't use entirely. But I tell kids, get the piece of paper. Just do it. Get the degree. It makes things a lot easier. Now, would I trade my path for any other? No, because I ended up exactly where I thought I wanted to be, but it would have taken a lot less stress to get to this point. And it was not a fun conversation with my parents about it, but I think my dad deep down understood why I did what I did. And it's all worked out. Like, I'm 29 years old. I'm, you know, on the doorsteps of a big league play-by-play job, and I'm extremely happy where I am.
When you make that transition at MILB, did you notice a big difference in calling professionals versus calling amateurs? Like, are there, you know, the calling baseball games at Arizona State, you're going to see some of those Pac-12 games are just as talented as, you know, RIP rookie ball, but just as talented as rookie ball in a lot of cases, or even a little more polished. Did you notice differences in how you had to go about your craft when calling professionals versus calling amateurs?
Yeah, absolutely. I think the big wake up call, like you said, you know, going from Pac-12 baseball to rookie ball in the Pioneer League, we were not a great team in Orem, but we won the first half somehow and then won the championship. There was one big leaguer or two big leaguers on that team in Orem, Jamai Jones and Jose Rojas. Like, and even then, they both have kind of bounced around. Like, Jose's playing in Korea right now. Jamai is now in the Brewers organization, but he's bounced around to a few other teams. Like, it's so much harder to be successful in professional baseball than it is in Pac-12. That doesn't mean the quality of play was better or worse. I think it was pretty equal, like you were saying, but like, then you understand, yeah, here's this 18-year-old or 17-year-old Dominican. It's his first time playing in America, and understanding how the game is played and playing in front of 50 people in Helena, Montana, or 20 people on a Sunday in Orem, Utah. For people who aren't familiar with the geography of Utah, Orem is practically sister cities with Provo. So with a very large LDS population in Utah, and specifically Provo, of course, and BYU, we petitioned to have Sundays off because nobody would attend. We're also, at the time, I think one of only two teams in all of minor league baseball that didn't sell beer because we were so close to Provo. Like, no one was going to drink it. It's LDS. So it was kind of wild, that culture shock of, okay, this is, nobody's here. The players are getting their first taste of American professional baseball. And it's like, oh, we're going to ride on a bus for 13 hours. Like, we're going to drive to Montana. And it's just like, you find out if you love it really quick doing that. So I wouldn't trade it for anything. I learned so much so fast in just those 83 games or whatever. And it led me into my next few jobs down the road.
I asked Trey the same thing, and this seems like a good point to ask it when, especially in, you've kind of laid out that in the minor leagues are more about development than winning. You might, you know, there might not be a lot of people there. There's maybe a couple guys who are going to play in the big league, something like that. And you've got to be talking the whole game. You can't switch off the mic when it is 12-1 in the sixth and it's a getaway day and there's just nothing going on. The opposing team's pitching, you know, putting a position player in and things like that. What is the breakdown of the strategy of, hey, we got to blow out, we got nothing going on. How do you stay locked in a situation like that?
It's the old Joe DiMaggio quote, like, you know, some kid in the stands has never seen me play before, so I'm going to give my all. Someone's parent, someone's friend, someone's girlfriend is listening and living and dying with every at bat of this player on your team. You know, don't sell them short. That's how I view it, because I explain this to all my friends. Like, you can turn off the game. Like, if it's 12-1 in the fifth inning, you can turn off the game, but I won't take it personally, because I'm still going to be there. And that if you're still with me in the sixth inning of a 12-1 game, there's a reason for it. And I'm going to continue giving it. Now, does it mean every pitch is the World Series game 7? Of course not. But being respectful and being honest with what's happening for the development of the player, like, you know, the pitcher blew it open in the second inning, right? Just, you know, hey, I talked to the pitching coach this week and he was really working on the slider. And you mentioned the development part of things. Like, there are things that we don't know always in the broadcast booth, always. So explaining that to the fan, you know, maybe it's the top prospect that was pitching that game, so you have a larger than usual audience. We went through a lot of this in Corpus Christi with Forrest Whitley. Forrest Whitley still in the minor leagues. He just got granted a fourth option year, I saw, for the Astros. That everyone has heard so much about this first round pick. He's like maybe the only one that's not going to work out for Jeff Luhnow since Mark Appel. Like, what's going on with Forrest Whitley? Everybody cared about Forrest Whitley, what he was doing. And then he'd give up 5 runs in the third inning or whatever. But you go down after the fact and you talk to the pitching coaches, like Graham Jones, like, yeah, we wanted him to throw a first pitch slider every at bat. And then the other team caught on to that. So there are always things that you can project and make clear that you're not trying to, you know, say, oh, gosh, Forrest Whitley, he's a bust, he stinks. Like, no, he's not. He had something they were trying to work on. And if it's for the offense or if it's for a story, if it's whatever, don't sell the listener short, because they're still with you for a reason. Just take it seriously, but not too seriously, if you will, right? Like, it's 12-1. Like, don't ignore the elephant in the room, but there's a reason somebody's listening to this at bat or this pitch for something. Somebody in the organization could be listening. So treat it seriously.
You mentioned that the Orem job led to one job, led to another job. You've called at multiple levels now. You're obviously calling the big leagues, but what is each offseason like when you reach kind of broadcaster free agency? You're not, you know, when you're in the minors, you're not locked down to some sort of long-term deal. You know, you don't have to hit arbitration. You don't have to wait out 7 years. When final pitch of the season is thrown, what does your offseason typically look like, especially when you were in the minors? And obviously the goal, just like it is with the players, is advancement.
So 2016 to 2017 offseason, I did not go to the winter meetings. This was still when the job fair was a thing. Didn't go to the winter meetings. I just knew I wasn't going to go back to Orem, and reaching out to everything, I knew there was going to be the two new teams in North Carolina with Buies Creek and Down East, leaving the California League. So RIP High Desert. Just always tried to bank on those. And I applied to other places to be a number two. For instance, I know you had Trey Wilson on the show recently, and when Trey was in Altoona, I had actually committed to Trey to be his number three. So no guarantee of even doing play-by-play because nothing else was biting. And then a week later, Down East called and said, we would like you to be our first voice of the Down East Wood Ducks. So I had to call Trey back, like, hey man, sorry. And it goes back to your point with the free agency stuff. Things get wacky in free agency, and you're always kind of thinking in 18 month increments, because, you know, for instance, when I was in Kinston, you know, all right, I had 6 months covered. So what are the next 6 months, you know, next 4 months or so of offseason going to look like? Then you maybe arrive to Kinston a month before the season, like March 1, you would start. Games wouldn't start till like April 5. Games end September 1. Then you got to factor for playoffs, and you're probably on the payroll till the end of September cleaning things up. Then you got to figure out October through February again. So what I did was just always think ahead. I'm a notorious planner, note taker. I'm just always thinking ahead and trying to see the big picture. It can get a little exhaustive at times when you just want it now and you have to be so patient during all of this. But I went to the rumor meetings between 2017 and 2018, knowing I had an open invitation to return to Kinston, and I ended up returning to Kinston, but just kind of tested the water, see what else was out there, if anything was going to be better. And then another thing happened in 2019 where I had committed to Salem because it was a better paying job, even though it was in the same league, better paying job, you know, Red Sox, who could say no to the Red Sox. And, you know, I admired the people that were around the team there, Susie Cool and everybody that I would have been affiliated with. Then literally 3 weeks into that job, Corpus Christi called me. So it just becomes like, hey, hard conversation here to have, but I got a better opportunity. Thank you for taking a chance on me and yada, yada. And, you know, they can be mad at you for a week or 2 weeks or the whole season, but everything works out for a reason because Melanie Newman and I are still great friends to this day. Melanie ended up getting that Salem job and then she's in the big leagues a year later. So it all works out as it's supposed to. And love my time in Corpus Christi. And then 2020 happened and we all had to pivot.
We talk about jumps in the minors for the players. We always talked about like the jump from high A to double A was the second biggest jump besides double A to the majors. And you've now risen through all of them. Are there, for a broadcaster, are there jumps? Do fastballs get better? Do sliders get better? What are kind of the adjustments up the ladder that need to be made to sharpen your craft?
The biggest thing I've learned listening back to old stuff is how I use my voice. I've always had a deeper voice than I was projecting onto the air. And I wasn't using my diaphragm right, or I was speaking out of my throat or speaking out of the back of my mouth as opposed to from my chest. And that would lead to voice cracks. That would lead to running out of breath in the middle of a high-paced call or basketball or football. I'd be like the it ramps up, like it just kind of crescendos upward of just trying to, like, you're running out of breath, so your voice pitch gets higher. Brian Anderson taught me all this stuff. And what I've learned is, like, that's one way to do it, like controlling your voice. Like Kevin Harlan, that deep voice, like you need a lot of wind for that voice. Or Mike Breen controlling his breath for to call a bang. Or you look at Bob Costas, always in control, always thinking of what he's going to say before he says it. Eric Nadell has been a big idol of mine growing up, listening to him and my dad back with the Rangers days, and finally got to call a World Series. You can just see how genuine a reaction it was. And it was just so, you were not dreaming, and it was really great. So those are ways that you can get better, just seeing the action. My biggest thing that I've always stressed, even since I was like 17 years old, is pitch identification, especially on radio. Because on TV, we can see it's a big looping Clayton Kershaw curveball. But I think if you have the skill to say, here's the pitch, curveball, and then, you know, the swing or the take or whatever, the listener already has a picture in their mind of, okay, I know what the pitch is looking like, and then he swings, lines at the right field. I can already picture, like, okay, he's taking it inside out or whatever. I think that's a big skill that I've tried to develop over the years, pitch identification as it's coming out of the hand. There are other ways as far as actual mechanics, like saying the score or defensive alignment or who's on deck, little things like that that are evergreen in a broadcast. But there are other ways to kind of freshen it up along the way.
So walk me through then finding your way to Milwaukee, you know, kind of getting that first foot in the door of the big leagues.
It's wild. Let me backtrack. 2017 spring training, I got to do my first big league games, filling in on A's radio and then filling in on Rangers radio for spring training games because native Phoenix, easy to get around, didn't have to pay for a hotel or a car or anything like that. So with all due respect to all the big league broadcasters, none of them want to do the spring training games. I can guarantee you that. Whereas kids like me want to do the spring training games because it's tape. So I got to do a lot of that in 17. That folds into 18, same thing. 2019, now I'm a member of the Astros, but the Rangers still had me fill in for a couple. The A's still had me fill in for a couple. And then 2020 was really popping, where I did A spring training again. I did a couple of Rangers again just to fill in. And then the Astros flew me to West Palm to do a few of their games on KBME with Robert Ford. And I was also getting ready to do my TV debut in 2020 with Pac-12 Network to do a handful of ASU games and U of A games back in Arizona. We all know what happened in March of 2020. I had already done my three games with the Astros, and they flew me back home, and it was no big deal. I was already flying the day that I was planning to fly, first thing in the morning. And while I was flying, everything was getting canceled below me. I was like kind of in the twilight zone of just like, I'm the only, you know, us and 180 people on this plane have no idea the world is going to be different when we land. And got off the plane to like 20 missed calls and a million text messages and just like, hey, Dom, the game's canceled this weekend. Sorry, we're going to figure it out. Sounds like it's going to be a 2-week thing. Obviously, it wasn't. And you think of all this stuff. I'm like, okay, what's going to happen? What's going to happen? What's going to happen? This 18-month block that I had planned out is now totally kaput. And I get, you know, informed very late in the process that I was getting laid off by the Astros. And I had to figure out this backup plan just in case. It was, I could see the writing on the wall. Nobody was making money in the minor leagues at that time. So I get laid off from the Astros in January, officially in February, but like I could tell it was happening in January. And I created this backup plan to move to Milwaukee because I originally wanted to move to North Carolina because I wanted to work for Pinehurst and work at Learfield IMG again. I did that in my off seasons when I was in the Carolina League. So I called Brian Anderson, the voice of the Brewers and TNT and TBS, say like, hey, this is my plan. I'm going to move to Pinehurst, move back to North Carolina. Do you think this is crazy? And he said, yes, this is crazy. You should move to Milwaukee instead because I need a stats guy for like 50 games. And because nobody was traveling in the 2021 season, there was empty booths. So those games that I wasn't calling on or wasn't doing stats for, I would go call a tape and stay sharp doing broadcasts to an audience of one, just to myself. And I would just listen back, self-evaluate, find a couple of tapes and keep getting better, keep getting better. And the stats blossomed into 50 games, became more like 100 games, which became his TBS slate, which became his playoff postseason, which became working with Bob Costas, which became all this extra stuff because of the right place at the right time. And I thank Brian every day for what he's done for my career. And then finally, a year and a half ago, in the middle of the season, Matt Pauly got a job with KMOX down in St. Louis, who was the pre and post host of the Brewers. And WTMJ called me and was like, we think you're the perfect fit for this. And I've been in the role ever since. Just finished a full season, did the second half of the season in 2022, just did the full season in 2023. And we're headed back for 2024 to do more with the Brewers.
So that's a lot of awesome, exciting baseball stuff. But you said the name Pinehurst, which allows me to get to your, do you consider it your second job, your side hustle? You caddy at Erin Hills, which is a very interesting second life for someone who is broadcasting. How did you fall into that?
So I caddied when I was in college. This is part of the reason why I dropped out too, because I was making money and I was like, man, like I just want to pay off these student loans and get out of here and start doing broadcasting. But you know, I was making money doing that. And I was caddying at True North in Scottsdale while I was a student. And I was just always enamored with that job. And I've always said, you know, golf, even in the turmoil this week in golf, like golf has always been the sport I want to call the most. Like I love the game of golf. Like I said, I was always better at golf than I was at baseball. I still carry a single digit handicap. I was a lot better when I was younger, but you know, life gets in the way. But when, you know, I was thinking of 2020, 2021, what to do, Pinehurst always stuck out to me because it's Pinehurst. Like what more can you say? It's one of the best resorts in America. And it gave me a chance to still work for Learfield, which maybe that was going to be the route I take, stay in the college world and stay in that side of thing. And then when I told that to Brian Anderson, he was like, you can caddy at Erin Hills. I'm like, oh yeah, I haven't even thought about Erin Hills. I haven't even thought about Wisconsin golf. I knew nothing. I had never stepped foot in Wisconsin when I moved here in 2021. And my first time in Erin Hills, my jaw was just on the floor the whole time. I fell in love with the place. I've now caddied there for 3 years. I would call it like my second job. I wouldn't call it a side hustle because I love it. And I don't get to caddy as much as I used to, but I love caddying there. It's definitely a good chunk of change to help me out through the year. But it's a busy day, to say the least. Like I'll wake up at 6 a.m., go straight to the course, caddy for 5 hours, shower there, then go straight to the ballpark, work the game, then do the post-game show, and then hopefully I'm in bed by midnight, and then we do it all over again the next day. And it's a cliche, but I truly am living the dream. That's exactly how I would have drawn it up.
We'll hop on the baseball train back here in a second for anyone listening to this and is like, I don't want to hear about golf, but I got to – you say you want to call golf, and the obviously golf is kind of, say, in turmoil, but a lot of changes happening. But the product, the TV product, the announcing, who's going to be calling the big tournaments, things like that is always up for discussion, up for debate. What does golf broadcasting need more of, and what in your opinion, I would love to know as a professional, makes for a good golf call?
I try to give NBC the benefit of the doubt because they've got so many commercials, but it's unwatchable at times.
It's horrible.
But it's not that CBS doesn't have a lot of commercials either. It's just the way that golf works, that, you know, this high yield market that is, you know, the 45 and up white male, you know, investor market that they're trying to attach is why these ads are so crazy. But as far as the actual product, I thought CBS was great this year. Dottie Pepper's awesome. Smiley's getting better on NBC as well. John Wood's fantastic on NBC. I know the TV booth doesn't, like, the actual tower matters less than people think in golf, because, you know, you're always kicking it down to Ian Baker Finch, who's on the 16, watching all the shots come in here. Or if we're at Augusta, right, we kick it to, you know, back in the day it was Faraday at Amen Corner, or Novello on 17 or whatever. So, like, those are the jobs that I want. I don't necessarily want to be in the 18 tower. I want to be watching a singular hole all day, or follow a group all day, things like that. You know, the easy answer to fix golf broadcasting is youth, but, like, that's such a cliche answer, and I've realized, like, it's not the answer. You just need passionate people. I think so many people nowadays, when they watch golf, are, like, going through the motions, and that includes behind the scenes. You know, there are some people that I know that work golf, and it's just like, another tournament this week. Like, here we go. Like, then get out of the way. You know, it's not, you know, you had a great career. Let's let people who are passionate about this and putting the best product out there do it. Because the thing is, the people that are doing the best work are doing football or are doing basketball. Like, they're doing the big events for these networks. They don't get the chance to do golf because the golf people have been there forever. So I think it's time just for some new energy to get things going back in the right direction in the golf broadcasting world.
Yeah, you mentioned Smiley, and I think he specifically is someone who seems like he's really enjoying what he's doing, and that comes through.
Absolutely. Smiley's great. I got to meet Smiley a couple of years ago at the match. I've worked a couple of the matches with Brian Anderson at TNT, and Smiley's a really good dude, and he did a few of our stuff, and meeting Charles Barkley that way. There's a funny story about that one day that I can tell to some folks. Maybe you can hear if you're around BA and myself or Chuck, about chipping lessons. So it was really, and Trevor Immelman was great too. He was there for that. So really, really cool to be around those people who just, we all love the game. I wish that could come across on some of the broadcasts, which I don't think it does as it currently is.
I would agree. So back to baseball, you handle a call-in show. And I think that's kind of not a lost art, but we don't get as much of that as you did in, like, 90s sports talk radio. I think about, like, hearing clips of call-ins from Mike and the Mad Dog. Like, there's the greatest hits and stuff on YouTube that's just funny. What is, I guess, the strategy of dealing with call? Like, do you have some regulars, some people, like, you hear, like, you know, John from Milwaukee's on the phone, and you're like, oh God, this guy again. Like, what's kind of the process there?
We absolutely have regulars still. We always like variety. I look at the way the last two games of the year went for the Brewers, right? They get bounced in the first round by the Diamondbacks, who ended up winning the pennant. And I basically turned those post game shows into sounding boards. You know, just, I don't want to say much today. Let's take your calls. And ton of interaction, some of the regulars, but then, like, during the regular season, right? When the A's swept the Brewers this year, and then the Brewers lost the next two games to the Twins. Like, it was rock bottom. They go back to 500. They just got swept by the worst team in baseball. Those calls were certainly active. But for me, I'm such a level-headed person when it comes to the big scope of baseball season. It can be, you know, contrary to what talk radio is. And I don't listen to talk radio. I don't listen to, like, Part of My Take. I don't listen to the, you know, 12-3 sports talk show, and they can do their thing. Like, I don't think it's a bad thing. People crave that. I'm never going to be the hot take artist. I'm never going to be the Mad Dog screaming into my microphone for no reason. I'm always going to see the bigger picture, be critical when necessary. And I have had people within baseball organizations that tell me, like, I listen to your stuff. You're right. Thank you. Keep doing the good thing. Like, people that actually try to win games have told me, you're right about this. Thank you for saying that. So that's how I'm going to roll with it. I'm going to be level-headed. I'm going to listen to critiques. I'm going to push back on things that I think are wrong, like bunting. I hate bunting, and that's all my fan base ever wants to talk about sometimes. There's time and place for bunting, but William Contreras bunting in the seventh inning of a tie game is not a time I want him to bunt. So stop calling me. It's like the Nick Saban. Stop asking. Like, no, William Contreras is not going to bunt with a one out, runners on first and second in the seventh inning of a tie game. This isn't Little League. Like, he's swinging. If he strikes out, he strikes out. So I use it as an educational tool. I'll use it as like a, let's relive this incredible moment, or we'll use it as a sounding board like we did at the end of the season.
So you've done all these different things, calling different sports, doing a call-in radio show, being a statistician. Is 162 in a big league booth, like, is that the pinnacle? Is that the end goal? Is that where you want your next 10 years to be?
Yeah, I still want to call games every day. I know that it's not linear, and to get to that seat, I've been close on a couple of places. The people that are closest to me know how close I've been in some places. And all of that creates experience, and all of that creates things to glean from and draw from the next time I'm in that room for an interview, the next time I'm a finalist, the next time a team calls me out of the blue and asks, what do you think about this job? So it happens when it's supposed to happen. My dad got his first job when he was 30. I'm 29. We got time. My dad's now getting ready for his 32nd season in the show. So there's no rush is what I try to tell kids. Like, I was just talking to a kid I'm mentoring back at Arizona State. Like, you are 21 years old. It's not going to come tomorrow. And I know we see the Noah Eagles of the world, and we see the kid who's calling the Clippers now, whose name escapes me. These kids that are fresh out of college and doing their thing and doing such a great job. Those are the anomalies, right? I think of it's more common to find the Adam Amins and the Kevin Burkharts of this world that were grinding for so long. Kevin Burkhart was selling cars in New Jersey. Adam Amin wasn't sure what he was doing in Denver. And now, like, Adam's a great friend. He'll be here in Milwaukee tonight calling the Bulls.
He's the best.
He's great. So I tell kids to follow those stories more than the Noah Eagles of the world, more than the Joe Davises of the world, because look, Noah's incredibly talented. Noah might be the next great one. He's had every resource given to him, just like I have. And I'm not ignoring that either, but I think it's so easy to compare yourself to people that you shouldn't be comparing yourself to. BA gave me this advice, and I live by it every day. Comparison will kill you. It simply will kill you. Nobody's route is the same. Just follow yours and be proud of it and learn from it. And ultimately, it's going to lead me where I want.
I got a quick rapid fire for you, then I'll let you get out of here.
Let's do it.
Favorite big league ballpark?
Fenway immediately came to mind, but I also love Camden Yards.
Favorite minor league ballpark?
God, I haven't thought about minor league parks in a long time. You know what? I loved, just because I'm sentimental to the city, Winston-Salem. I absolutely love, I think it's called BB&T still. I don't know what it is now, but absolutely love Winston-Salem.
Favorite Milwaukee food spot?
That's a great question. Gosh. I'm going to go, there's an Italian place across the street from me. It's called Calderone Club. Also next door, it's got San Giorgio Pizzeria. It's like that classic Neapolitan style. Like, fantastic. One of the first places I ever ate in Milwaukee, and I'm never leaving. So yeah, Calderone and San Giorgio here in Milwaukee.
Best hole at Erin Hills?
12, par 4, downhill, kind of snakes, dog leg, blind second shot. It's an example of how we didn't move any land at Erin Hills. It's meant to be like formed by the glaciers. 12, such an awesome hole. 15 is such an awesome hole too. So come on out to Erin Hills. I'd love to have you back.
And then last one, everyone gets this. Do you have a nightmare travel story from the minor leagues?
God, how do I pick just one? I've had... Twice I've checked into my room and there is somebody already in the room. Oh, total stranger. I've had bus breakdown just like everybody, it seems. I would say I would say probably for me it was in the Pioneer League. We were normally, like, league rules is you had to have an off day after a, you know, at least minimum 600 miles or whatever it was. And we were leaving, I believe it was Missoula, to come back to Orem. So that's like a 12-hour drive. But we weren't going to have an off day the next day because our ownership begged and pleaded and petitioned to the league to say, we don't want to have to play on Sunday at home. Like I mentioned earlier, how attendance takes a hit on Sundays in Orem. So the league said, okay, you get a Sunday off day and you don't get the off day on the travel down from Missoula. Lo and behold, that night game has a rain delay and it's our last game of the season head to head with Missoula. And so we have to play this game and all this, it ends up being, it just was brutal. We didn't hit the road until like 4 a.m. and we arrived back in Orem something like 2:30, 3 o'clock, and just basically got off the bus and went straight to work. Like it was, that was brutal. That's the one I was like, yep, season's almost over. Like, let's just get this over with. And I just slept all day the next day.
Yeah. And if there's anything to take away from this, folks, always flip the latch on your hotel room. Always, always, always flip the latch when you get in. Make sure that thing is locked up. Dom, that is all I've got for you. Thank you so much for joining from Phenom to the Farm.
No, thank you so much, Kyle. Appreciate the time, man, and love the work and keep up the great stuff.
You got it, man. Thank you. And that's it for today's episode of From Phenom to the Farm. Big thanks to Dominique for coming by, walking us through his journey through baseball. Looking forward to seeing where the game takes him and where we can hear him on the call. If you enjoyed this episode, please remember to subscribe wherever you get your podcast, rate and leave a review if you're an Apple Podcast or Spotify. Make sure to subscribe to baseballamerica.com and the BA podcast feed for all amateur baseball and prospect news. We'll catch you in 2 weeks. Thanks for listening.